If you listen to this podcast and follow what we do at Troutbitten, then you're a thoughtful angler, and you don't accept the status quo simply because that's how it's always been done. Squall of Fishing designs and creates fly fishing apparel with this same philosophy. Squalla was started by a group of lifelong fly anglers who spent their careers working for some of the biggest names in the outdoor industry, and they understood that essential fly fishing apparel like waders, jackets, sun gear, and insulation could simply be better. So now, Squalla makes gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Water is essential for life, but for Orvis, it's the blood of the brand. Orvis has been the leader in fly fishing since 1856. No other brand can match the explorative and innovative spirit they bring to the water today. Everything at Orvis is about inspiring and empowering adventure and wonder in nature. Rooted in the vitality of fly fishing, fueled by passion and curiosity for the outdoors, Orvis designs and develops products and experiences, providing the knowledge and expertise to enable more meaningful moments and connections in nature. With over a century and a half of experience in the field and on the water, Orvis seeks to ignite that passion in others. This is the Troutbitten Podcast.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
Troutbitten?
Yeah, Troutbitten.
Troutbitten.
It's about trout.
Wild trout.
This is Troutbitten.
This is the Troutbitten Podcast, and thanks for tuning in. I'm Dominic Swantoski, the owner of Troutbitten and the author of Troutbitten.com. Tonight's discussion is about missing fish and losing fish. Why does it happen? Is it an accident? Is it avoidable? And how can we improve our hookup and landing ratio on the water? This is a fun topic that's sure to give all of us a few things to think about. Now, if you're at the point where you're worrying about why you're missing and losing fish, then really, you know you're already doing a lot of things right. Fooling trout is the hard part. Fly fishing is not easy. And trout, especially wild ones, are not forgiving. They don't grant you much grace. And rarely do trout take lousy presentations. So if you trick a fish into taking your fly, then pat yourself on the back. And if you start to fool them often enough that you notice a trend of missing or losing fish, then again, just know that you're doing a lot of things right. Convincing trout that a fake fly is the real thing is tough. The rest? Well, all of that comes a lot easier. So of course we want to land our trout. Missing and losing fish is frustrating after a while because we sense that there's more we can do to keep fish buttoned up. And really, there is. There are observable causes for trout missing the fly, just as there are mistakes we make on our end that result in another miss or a lost trout. Like everything else in fishing, there's a lot of nuance to this topic. Reasons and strategies for missed and lost trout change whether it's dry flies, nymphs, wets, or streamers. Maybe a trout refuses our dry fly in a quick squirt as it rejects the pattern in a last-second decision. It looks like the trout ate, so we set the hook and even feel the hook touch the fish, but we still miss it. This is not a hook-setting error. It's a presentation error, probably. The fish refused the fly. The same happens with our streamers, and this is where I think we see it the most. When trout charge the streamer and maybe even strike it, but they don't eat it, then no amount of perfecting the hook set will catch that fish. So there's a lot to see and understand here, and that's what we're ready to talk about tonight. I'm joined again by the Troutbitten crew, Josh Darling, Trevor Smith, Austin Dando, Bill Dell, and Matt Grobe. None of these guys ever miss trout anymore because their presentations are so refined and their reactions, their hook sets are so clean that their hookup ratios are collectively perfect. Is that right, guys?
Collectively.
Collectively perfect.
No mistakes.
Yep. It's a weighted average.
True statement.
True statement. Seriously, do you guys miss fewer fish now than you did, 5 years ago?
Some days.
I think I catch more fish, and I feel like it's a ratio. There's a ratio there. Like, if you're catching more fish, you might miss more fish, but my percentage is better.
There you go.
My hookup percentage is better.
Or you're catching more fish because you're missing less fish.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Maybe. Maybe.
Maybe. Hey, let's jump right into our question then. Trevor, will you read this one, please?
Sure. This question comes from Henry Groves in Manhattan. Hey guys, big Trout Bitten fan here. I've been following your website articles for years, so I was really excited when you started a podcast, and you did not disappoint.
Exclamation point.
I'm wondering about the exclamation
point. Big Trout Bitten guy.
Big Trout Bitten fan.
I'm wondering about the future. Do you know what the next seasons will be already, or do you plan it as you go? If I may suggest, I'd love to hear more of the season two approach with multiple podcasts focusing in on one tactic. Also, do you plan to have guests on your podcast in future seasons? At first, I thought that's something you were missing. But now, after hearing the ideas and interaction between you all each week, I don't think you need any other guests.
Exclamation.
Just wondering what I have to look forward to. Please keep the good stuff coming. I regularly donate on your website. All the best, Henry G.
Henry G.
Yeah, that's how you get featured, guys. Donate.
Yeah.
That's true.
I was a guest. Let's make
say
that
nice
clear.
Things. And then you, yeah. What are you saying, Matt? You were a guest.
I was a guest. I was the only guest. And now
that's true. And now you're a feature.
Yeah. So it was one and done. Dom had me on, and now I'm a regular.
True. You were the only guest, and you ended up being a permanent member, a feature.
There you go.
You got voted in. You got voted in.
That's right. That's true.
No, you can't get voted. I mean, I was part of the original Trout.
That's right. He's already in.
That's right.
Right. What did you used to call it?
What do you mean? The OG.
No, well, the OG, but before that, you had a name for you, Sawyer, and what was it?
Legacy. Legacy.
The
Trout.
Legacy. Trout.
That's what it
legacy.
Was. Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
There have been eras of Trout. That's true.
So to answer his question. There's a
first
legacy.
Of all, Henry G, seriously. No, he does donate. Seriously, I appreciate that. Honestly, lots of people ask how they can help support it. Well, that's great. You know, at the end of every article on Trout Bitten, every article, there's a place to donate through PayPal. And it really helps support. It's a big deal. I mean, there's a lot of different revenue streams through for Trout Bitten. And that donation really adds up at the end of every month. So I thank Henry and anybody else who donates. That's super nice. And keeps the engine going. Anyway, what are the future plans?
Ooh. Are you asking us?
Wait, we have a say?
We have a say? Wait a minute. A what?
There's like shareholder stakes.
We each get half a vote, right?
Right. We are going to, season four is going to be a dry dropper. Like Austin and I did, season two? Nine Essential Skills of Tightline Nymphing. We're going to do... three styles of dry dropper. That'd probably take 5 or 6 episodes, I think. And that gives everybody a break. Even gives me a break because they're not as long and they're much more jam-packed with lots of information rather than a discussion. And yeah, there'll be a couple weeks off in between seasons. And then, well, season 5, I plan anyway to get right back on here with you guys and do just similar things. There's so much to cover. I have gotten that same question. Are we going to have guests? I mean, what do you guys think in the future?
I think it's hard to ever say never to something like that. Right. But I just think like the utility of having guests is sort of outshadowed currently by our ability to have chemistry with each other and sort of flesh out some of these topics deeply without getting distracted into side discussion about everyone's individual kind of projects at the time and all
there
that
you
stuff.
Go. Yeah, right on. I'm with you. I'm not going to say we'll never do it. I think it would be neat, I don't know, years from now, maybe, start having guests on that we think would be very interesting. They might not even be big names or popular names or, you know, personalities in the industry. But we know some pretty interesting people, some very interesting people. And we've even mentioned a couple.
I think we are very interesting people.
There you go, especially you, Doc. No, I do. I think we have a lot to say. You know, I mean, we have a lot to talk about still.
I think the guest thing is nice, but I think Trout Bitten seems to be about learning. And so learning how to fish and ways to fish. If you do start to have guests on, it's going to be difficult because I feel like most of the guest stuff turns into questions about that person.
Sure.
Introducing them. And so you lose some of the knowledge sharing.
Really, you do.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Sure.
That way of doing it. But, you know, that's already out there. Like our friend Jason, he's doing a good job at that. So we don't necessarily need to ask people about their story and stuff. We can kind of just get right into the instructional stuff.
No, good Bill's point. Right. When you have a guest on, you kind of have to talk about, hey, you got to tell me a little bit about yourself. There you go, 15 minutes. 15 minutes later. No, and that's cool. But yeah, Josh, like I feel the same way. That format is out there. That's great. And I think we are doing something a little different. And I like the path we're on.
I like different.
Yeah. Matt, you were going to say something?
Well, you know, we're talking about trout bitten. We know that inside and out. And I think that's what we're trying to convey on a weekly basis, right? How to be trout bitten, how to live this life of fishing. And, you know, to Doc's point, I mean, we all kind of happens naturally. We don't practice this.
Not so much.
Yeah.
That's true.
So, but that's not always this case. That's not
right.
always
we mostly
case.
Like that's each true. Other, right? We mostly like each other.
Right. We just have a loose outline and we fly.
Yeah.
Now it's become pretty easy now too.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I think if you read any of the reviews too, it kind of mirrors what we're saying. I think folks like kind of getting used to a certain crowd and they kind of get used to each character. Yeah. And it feels comfortable and it's fun because you learn each personality. And
what's your character?
What's my character?
What's your character?
Young love.
Big guns.
Yeah.
People can't see them though.
Come on.
What's your character?
Guns, young love.
Choose your fighter.
Choose your fighter.
Choose your angler.
we need to make trout bitten player cards.
Yes.
There you go.
The skills points and
a low riffle. I will play Bill.
That should be the rating.
The rating. What would the rating be?
I don't know.
Public, you mean? Yeah, from the listeners.
Public. No one will like the guy that walks through their hole when they get high hole.
Stats. You're gonna have stats on the back like a baseball card.
This is a great idea.
Mr. Sweet D.
I get a lot of emails. You guys know that. I share some of these emails with you guys, and people like Doc for all his science. No joke. You know, oh, I like that guy. And then once in a while, I'll get an email that says, hey, I'm disappointed that your science guy or your doctor didn't say this or that, didn't bring this, this or that. I'm like, he's responsible for everything intelligent, you know, that needs to be said on the podcast.
That's true.
Didn't he research that?
Yeah.
Anyway, exactly. Everybody's got a character.
Pretty cool.
There it is. You ready to move? You ready to go?
Let's do it.
All right. So why do we miss fish and why do we lose fish on a fly? That's our topic. Well, I'll say one thing. Never blame the fish, right? Is it the trout's fault that we miss fish? Yes, sometimes. But a lot of times it's our fault. And I kind of approach things like when I'm out there on the river, I'm always thinking, if I'm not catching fish, I blame it on myself. I say, I can do this better, you know? And so I like to believe that there is always something that I can do better because usually there is. And yet what we're going to talk about, I think sometimes it is the fish's fault. Fair enough. But often there are things we can do. Anyway, let me start by defining the terms a bit. We're saying miss a fish and lose a fish. But to me, a lost trout is one that was on the hook and then it popped off somehow. It was on there for a second. I don't know, maybe for 30 seconds. And then it popped off. But a missed fish is one that we never really hooked. We may have felt him eat or seen him eat, but when we set the hook, we don't connect. Maybe it's boom, and he's off, or just boom, tap, and he's gone. Or maybe we don't feel anything, you know? Maybe we feel a brief tug and a stop of the line, but that hook never really gets any hold on the fish. And so that, to me, is a miss, as opposed to that lost fish he was on for a second. You guys see it the same way, or you want to talk about it in a different way?
Yeah, I think that makes sense.
Hey, I agree with that.
Definitely makes sense.
Missed and lost, right? There's a difference. Mm-hmm. So that's the definition, right? That's missing and losing fish. But why do we miss them? Why do we lose them? You got anything to start off with?
Slack.
Yeah.
Yeah, right on.
Number one.
Good point.
Yeah, slack.
That's for me.
Unmanaged slack. That's the challenge of fly fishing. Right? You need to give, well, if we're aiming for a dead drift, especially, you need to give that fly some slack, some grace, you know, to sort of do its own thing. But when a fish eats, boom, you got to pick that up. So you got to be ready. Good point.
And it creates, like, it's what slack creates, right? It's the time, you know, like time between eat and then tightening of that line. That's, I feel like, the big part there. Like, it's making your reaction time slow. Mm-hmm. You can strike immediately, but all that slack delays the actual effect.
To piggyback on that, casting, right, goes into that. and you try to cast too long,
yeah,
and you have too much slack in the system. Recipe for missing fish, any technique.
No, that's a good point, because the further away you cast, the more line you're going to have to pick up to set the hook.
Yep.
And then when you do set the hook, even if you do have the fish, you might lose them because there's more line out there.
Yeah, it's true.
Just another great reason to fish as close as you can almost all the time.
Yeah.
Imagine if someone put as much time, thought, and effort into designing fishing apparel as you put into finding fish. Well, someone did. Squalla Fly Fishing builds waders, jackets, shirts, and pants so well designed, dependable, and comfortable, you hardly notice them. When you're wearing Squalla, you're never hot or wet or unreasonably cold, so you can focus on more important things, like fishing. They don't make gear for everybody. They make gear for us, the like-minded few, serious anglers who don't take themselves too seriously. Check them out at squallafishing.com. Then use the code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your first order from Squalla. Precision Fly and Tackle is a family-owned business with a passion for the outdoors and a sense of adventure. They are anglers who enjoy every moment spent on the water with family and friends. Precision Fly and Tackle carries the widest selection of Euro rods, reels, lines, leaders, flies, and accessories. From the beginner to the advanced angler, Precision Fly and Tackle can outfit every angler, no matter the budget. Visit them online at precisionflyandtackle.com. Then use code TROUTBITTEN10, that's the number 10, for 10% off your order. Gear up with Precision Fly and Tackle for your next adventure.
Something that gets me, I know, is just weak hook sets. It's like, let's say I go 5-10 minutes, hook setting. Okay, now I hit a fish, and I kind of got in a rhythm of giving these half-hearted hook sets. Now I set the hook, I see a fish flash, and I know exactly what I did, you know? Yep. And I didn't follow through, or I didn't do a thorough enough hook set that bounced them off.
So what makes it weak or not thorough enough, Austin? What do you think?
I think for me, I think like I just, the force that I set downstream, you know, I'm still setting downstream, but you know, maybe I'm setting up a little bit too much or something like that. You know, I think about angles that I set the hook and I get in a rhythm of sloppy hook setting. And maybe I'm setting high instead of down to the side or something like that. Because I'm getting used to, you know, my next back cast, let's say, or something. I think just the force is what does it for me. The force goes down.
Do you guys think that hook sharpness plays into that at all?
Oh, yeah.
Sure. Although I will say I hardly ever sharpen my hooks.
Yeah.
More on streamers than nymphs, I think, for me.
Yeah, I agree.
But I do believe that is a factor.
Austin, what you're saying is just it's tricky to do because you want to be able to give a short set to get off or check to see if it was a rock or something. If you're like halfway through your drift and you've got more space in that drift and you want to be able to check. You want to be able to check and then see if there's something there and then drop it back into that drift and let it finish out.
Yeah.
And get more time out of it. But that's tricky to do. It's tricky to generate enough speed over such a short amount of distance.
Sure.
To be able to not ruin your drift and still get an effective set.
Yeah, that word speed, I think for me, that's it. It's speed. That's an effective hook set. That's where it starts anyway.
Yeah, I think that is like, that's the primary source. And then any other sloppiness that follows just compounds that.
And I guess speed in two ways. Speed, like as soon as you have any indication that there's a strike, boom, you got a set. And speed of the rod tip, you know?
Yeah.
What you're saying there, Josh, about, well, a check set, we should, I think maybe here we'll have space in this podcast to talk about different types of hook sets.
Yeah.
So we could dedicate a full discussion to it. What you're talking there is that what we often call a check set. Check to see if something is there. As you're nymphing or maybe as you're fishing streamers, you can just pop it. I tell my guests a lot of times, just pop it. Give me like a 6-inch hook set, pop, and then let it settle.
Yeah.
It's kind of hard to do to move fast a rod tip that's only gone 6 or 10 inches. Okay, maybe even 12 inches, but you're aiming for 6, let's say.
Yeah.
And yeah, if you accelerate real fast, you'll hook the fish. Now, the other thing is it's hard to accelerate and stop and then not let it recoil and then what I call double clutch, you know, You need it? Okay. Be sure that there's not a fish there before you relax and let the fly get back down if you have that kind of weight.
That's a good point.
Lots of different stuff to talk about here. And if you're going to check set, boy, it needs to be efficient. It needs to be done the right way.
That's something that I've definitely found that I'm not doing. And honestly, I learned that in this filming process, Dom. I'm getting to watch you fish very closely every week.
Okay.
And I'm noticing that you're what we're calling it a check set. You know, your check set is a lot shorter than mine is.
It's swift, too. Yeah. I've seen that on film now, too. I'm like, whoo.
Yeah.
That is fast.
Yeah.
You know, I don't like, my whole body kind of gets into it sometimes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Even though it's only 6 inches, it's like, bam, you know?
Mm-hmm.
I think some of what impacts this too is that a lot of us are using rods with they're pretty long and they have a pretty sensitive tip, right? So you can generate a lot less power with a very sensitive rod tip with a short check set. And so it does really have to be, you really do have to commit to it. Right? Because the force generated, I think, is greatly impacted by what section of the rod is getting engaged in that speedy kind of check. Like the resistance of the tip of the rod is so much less that even if you make a very quick move and it only flexes the rod tip, that's very low resistance. That's not a ton of force you're generating that's going to be imparted to that fish's mouth, right?
That's fantastic.
Nice.
I'm reminded of this when I sometimes hook up on the bottom and I'm kind of trying to almost check set it free, just kind of quick moments. And I grab my line and pull. And what felt like a very strong resistance to my rod tip, as soon as I grab that line and pull, easily gives way and just reminds me of the difference in magnitude of force that you're implying or imparting to that fly with the tip of your rod versus maybe the lower section of your rod or even what your hand could do, like in a strip set.
That is good. That's great, Trevor. It makes me want to circle back around. When I said to move the rod tip 6 inches, I think what I'm really trying to do is move the fly maybe 6 inches or just a few inches.
Yeah.
And you're right. The rod in your hand and the flex and how it flexes, how it's designed to flex, is going to make a difference. And I know that, again, when we're night fishing, I'm using a much stronger rod.
Yep.
And a
bigger rope.
And a bigger rope. Good point. Yeah. So there's a lot more stiffness in the whole system.
Yeah.
So that kind of thing matters.
Yeah.
So when you talk,
you need to adjust to it.
When you're talking about hook sharpness, so the bigger the hook, the bigger the force you need to embed that hook in a fish. And so like the bigger the hook, either the hook set has to have more velocity to it. Or the hook has to be sharper. So like with a streamer, I'm going to set, for the most part, a lot harder because I know that hook is going to need more penetration power.
Mm-hmm.
And so if I know it's not sharp, I'll not like it. I'll either have to sharpen it or I'll just switch streamers out altogether.
Yeah. Can you notice missing more fish as you fish with a particular streamer longer?
Yeah.
I definitely notice it.
Yeah, that's about the only time I ever sharpen my hooks is when I go, dang it, I missed three in a row. And I'll go, all right.
You stick it in your thumb and it's not very, doesn't hurt very much.
Exactly. Thumbnail sticky.
Trick.
Yeah, if it won't stick to your thumbnail, you need to get out the file.
Yeah, so we're talking about, you know, the sharpness of hooks. And I think most of us use barbless hooks. Or, I mean, I use plenty of hooks that have barbs, but then I pinch them down. Honestly, I pinch all my barbs down now for my own sake, even more for the fish. Seriously, I've had enough hooks in my fingers and hands. I'm tired of it. So I pinch the barbs down. But I mean, we're going to lose fish more because the barb is not there, right? Okay, if you play a fish perfectly or even really well, it really doesn't make a difference then. But if you have any slack, like we said, the very first thing, you know, the reason we lose fish or miss fish is slack. So that barb will help at least a little bit. I do lose a few more fish because I use barbless hooks. I think that's fair. Anybody else?
I agree with that. I hear that a lot too from the people I fish with. Oh, I got away because I'm using these barbless hooks. And I think that's a dangerous road to go down because it's an easy excuse. It's an easy excuse. And that's, I mean, I don't notice, you know, I started with Mustad back in, you know, the late 90s and then go into
3906B.
Right. And then you get into these, I fish fire hole hooks now and they're smooth.
Yeah.
But I don't notice a big increase in the missed fish. I would attribute that mostly towards slack in the system than what your tools are producing.
That is a debate, you know, among the industry or more among the fly fishing community of,
yes,
which drives deeper hook penetration either, you know.
Yeah.
A barbless hook, let's say a fine wire hook, sure, mm-hmm. will, you know, penetrate quickly and deeply and have great holding power. Let's say it's designed in a way that it's got good leverage. You know, we talk about leverage, especially on jig hooks. And then you compare it to maybe a heavier wire barbed hook. Okay, the heavier wire, it's going to require more force, but will the barb overwork the holding power than deeper penetration of a finer hook will do? Yeah. And that's, I'm on the side. I'm not going to pick sides.
I'll pick sides. I'm on the stout wire side.
I believe in a stout wire, but I still fish a barbless hook on a stout wire.
Yeah, yeah, right on. And I pinch down the micro barbs, yeah.
But Austin, don't you think some of that had, like, maybe this is overthinking it, but some of those, mm-hmm. what you just described, those whatever, thicker barbed hooks, like, it correlate to streamers and how the fish eats that particular pattern, as opposed to, like, for me, like, nymphs, and this goes into, like, missing, like, I probably nymph more than anything, but I miss more fish nymphing, but I never like have a nasty, like not too many nasty hook sets on nymphs, where streamer fishing, in my opinion, really bangs up fish or dry flies because they inhale it. They just eat it a little bit different.
I agree.
Mm-hmm. And that can play into like how we're missing fish with these different techniques and how they're eating them.
No, that makes sense.
In a little bit, let's break down the difference, because we're talking about these differences. We'll talk about the differences between missing them and losing them on dry flies, on streamers, and on wet flies and nymphs. You guys think small flies make a difference too, right? I mean, I lose more trout when they're hooked to a, you know, during trico season when I'm trying to fish a number 26.
Yeah, I have confidence on certain hooks that when I get below an 18, I want one with a wider gap. I want one with like thicker wire because they're going to bend and
Bill, it's fun imagining you fishing a size 18.
I did it this weekend. Caught a couple fish on an 18.
On top or underneath?
Underneath.
3X?
I do it like once 3X. A year, you know, just for tradition.
You have like three of those in your box?
Yeah, number 18 three.
Nymphs.
Yeah, how'd you get the 3X through the eye, Bill?
Yeah.
How'd you get the 3X? That works.
I just tied it around the bead. And the lasso.
That's nice.
I think that's nice. I fish a size 20 a lot in the winter here. And I think if you're fishing 18s and missing fish a lot under the surface, like I end up missing some fish throwing small flies under the surface, but dry flies, I feel like a lot of the missing, and this kind of leads me to believe that a lot of it's back to the whole hook set thing. If I delay my hook set and let that fish eat that 20, I don't have many missed fish because I'm visually seeing what I'm doing wrong with the hook set piece. You just have to let them go underwater a little bit. And then that angle when I'm pulling back really embeds that size 20 hook. To where maybe sometimes, like I said, if we feel like that could be an excuse, right? I mean, it kind of makes sense. Your hook bend smaller, but I've had a lot of good days where I haven't missed fish on a size 20 fly. And so why is that? Is it more technique? Or is that just, like I said, another excuse that we use?
Yeah. I can agree that I might not miss more fish on a 20, size 20, but I think I lose more. You know, especially if it's a bigger fish and that little bit of flesh that's there just eventually kind of wears out and it just pops free. I lose more fish if it's a longer fight, if it's whatever. We try, we don't want it to be a longer
good
fight.
Point.
But even if they're on there for more than 20 or 30 seconds and I have a 18-inch fish on, it can kind of wiggle loose a lot more frequently. Again, I start to think to those number 24s and number 26 tricos.
Tiny
and
flies.
I just have a hard time bringing a lot of those fish in.
When you're talking like those smaller flies, you have less leverage on the fish because you have less mass of the hook in the fish. Where, like, if I hook it on a size, like, let's say 12 or bigger, I feel like you have more torque on that fish to kind of turn its head and control it better.
For sure.
True.
So, hey, before we move into, let's break these down, dry flies, streamers, and nymphs. But before we do that, let's say, like, missing fish is inevitable, right? I mean, losing fish. It happens to every one of us, despite what I said in the intro. Seriously. Well, I have guests all the time who they'll miss a few fish and they'll say, oh man, you know, they assume that someday they won't miss any fish. And I say, hey, even the best anglers out here, the best and most experienced anglers, I think even on your best day, you're still going to miss a percentage. I'm going to say 10%. Miss, maybe lose, what, combine the two terms, and yeah, maybe 10% or at least 5% on your very best day. You think so?
Easy. Yeah.
That sounds pretty easy. Great.
Yeah. I was thinking more like 20 on days.
There you go. Yeah, I was trying to be
trying to make us feel good, but
right. No, I don't know where you are, but seriously, like 10%. I don't know. I think even on my best day, I'm losing 10%. Maybe the best day I ever had, I still missed 5% or something of the fish.
But I think it depends on the type of fishing. Like there are some fishing styles that will leave you quite frustrated.
Right. So let's move into dry flies. Let's talk about it. Why do we miss fish on dry flies? Why do we lose them on dry flies?
I'll jump in because I missed quite a few fish yesterday when I was fishing dry flies.
On top.
On the surface, and I was fishing a double dry fly rig, but
get out, really?
Yeah, yeah.
You do that much?
I do, because there was a blanket white miller caddis, and caddis sit on the water different than a PMD, right? So you had the sailboats coming down with PMDs, and then the white miller, you know, would be a caddis, but it was so cold they didn't have a ton of movement, and I watched four or five different fish. One would eat the PMD and a different fish would eat the caddis, and then another fish would be focused on PMDs and another fish would be focused on a caddis. So I was like, you know what? I'm going to double rig it, fish the mono rig, tied the white miller on a tag, and then my PMD on the main line. And
that's fun.
Long story short, I started casting, and I wasn't, for me, the misses were because I wasn't taking my time to read the water. Right. To see the complex currents. And I just was like whipping it out there blindly, letting my line kind of just fall where it was. I was trying to, you know, shoot above the rise 3 feet and I wasn't paying attention to the current seams. And so if I would have taken more time to say, okay, this is how I'm going to present it. Maybe I'm going to cast, you know, above its head a little bit more or position my body up a little more to get a better drift. Yeah. I would have missed less fish because back to slack, right? I ended up having too much slack in the line, but it was because I wasn't reading the water properly and taking my time to dissect that. That caused me to miss a bunch of fish yesterday.
Yeah, because if you're putting two dries on the surface, you want them in the same seam.
Mm-hmm.
Or they're going to fight each other and drag. Yeah,
right. And I just was building up too many bellies. You know what I mean? And
right on.
Back to setting the hook. Well, I had a lot of slack out there, and I was missing these quick early season risers from these fish.
I feel like if you've got slack and you're having a bad presentation, the fish is not going to take it as naturally, and like it could, like, you know, last second reject it, or it could just kind of not gracefully eat it. Like the perfect way is if that fish comes up and just slowly sips it, closes his mouth and descends, and then you set the hook.
Confidence.
Yeah.
Yeah.
The fish is confident that that's a natural, but if it's not, then I think that does lead to more missed fish because he's eating it without confidence.
There you go. I guess it's sort of one of my key points. I think that's it, Bill. If you can get a really great drift, fish is going to eat it with confidence if he's hungry. But if your drift is a little off, I think one of the main reasons we miss fish is because the fly doesn't go where the fish expected it to be. If it's a dead drift and it starts to drag just a little bit right before the fish eats it, then he doesn't get it in the center of his mouth. He gets it right on the corner. And maybe he misses it. Or maybe we do hook him and we have him on for even 10 seconds, but eventually slips out because we didn't get a nice hook set because it started with a drift that was imperfect.
You're throwing curveballs.
You throw it there. That's nice. And they might get a piece of it,
right?
But they don't get all of it.
Exactly.
That's nice.
Yeah. Exactly.
You think that's why we snag fish?
Yes. Plenty of times. Yes.
Yeah.
I thought you always snagged them on purpose.
No, that's what Josh does.
Yep.
he just nods. He nods. He's chewing something.
That's Josh's character for today.
He's eating snacks. Snacks are illegal. You know that. It's in the bylaws. No snacks.
Peanuts.
Oh, well, yeah. What kind of peanuts are those?
Kirkland.
Kirkland. Are those Kirkland peanuts?
These are not Kirkland peanuts, no.
Oh, well, then they're still illegal.
Illegal? Okay.
I think peanuts and jerky.
Won't make the mistake again.
As far as like dry fly fishing goes, the other thing is I feel like...
Oh, bring us back.
Yeah, sorry.
It's good.
I'm trying to keep
Save
the sun.
Me. It's good.
I want to get to bed someday.
Yeah.
You know. So the other thing with dry fly fishing, I feel like if you're trying to extend yourself, fishing too far, and you're losing control, you're not able to return, like retrieve slack, and you're just kind of not comfortable yourself, and you don't have contact with the fly line, and you're in between strips or something, you're slipping on rocks, or you're not balanced, any of that stuff that prevents you from being stable, having contact with the fly line, miss fish a lot like that.
Just not ready. And when we fish dries, you do have the most slack in the system. You know, all the other presentations, we're trying to be a lot more in contact or just slightly out of contact, usually. I think we got the most slack to deal with, the most line to pick up when we're fishing dries. And if you don't have it just right, you miss a lot more fish. That's another way that it's our fault, right? It's our fault if the presentation isn't perfect because we throw them a curveball, like Trevor said, so he just barely hits it. And it's our fault, too, if, hey, he ate it, but we're late on that hook set.
Do you guys think there's any correlation between the amount of distance that the fish has to cover to get to the fly? I mean, like when we're nymphing, we miss less fish because generally I think the successful drifts are the ones where we're putting it right there for it. And it just moves over, like opens its mouth, moves back over if needed. And just, I'm just curious if you guys think that there's any correlation between, because obviously maybe streamers, we see the most misses probably. Dry flies is probably second and nymphs is...
With the dry flies, it depends on the fish and depends on the hatch, I feel like. So
go ahead.
Sometimes you have to read a fish. So when you see a fish rise, don't always throw to it. Maybe let it rise three or four times because sometimes you might see that fish move 5 or 6 inches and eat different flies, or that fish may be sitting in that exact seam and just rising up eating. And so if you don't spend a little bit of time to kind of determine the pattern of that fish, you could blow it too.
To jump in there, yesterday was a prime example because I had fish chasing caddis, which is a completely different situation to where scooching around to what Bill's saying. And then I also had fish that were in the lane just chomping PMDs and they didn't have to move. Yeah. I mean, they were just, look at the Pac-Man, you know, just boom, boom. And I could see though, right, which fish was eating what fly just by how they were rising.
Yeah, yeah. And
it was simple. It was like, okay, well, this fish is on a caddis. Well, I can get away with a crappier drift on the caddis just because of how they move in the water where the PMD, they want a dead drift. They want it in that seam. And so it's all part of the trying to figure out what tactic to use to make yourself more successful in catching the fish, not losing them.
I think what you're saying, though, back to that, rings some truth. I mean, I think sometimes when a fish takes a stab at a fly from far away, I feel like they do it in a haphazard way and almost sometimes throw themselves at it in a way that you almost can feel that they're not 100% sure they're going to get it. And maybe it has to do a little bit with the light refraction of them, like seeing a dry fly further away and going for it, that they're not exactly sure the placement of that fly. And so they kind of take a swoop at it or something like that. But I can't say that I've seen it happen on nymphs because I haven't just visually seen it happen.
Can't see it.
But on dry flies and on streamers both, I have seen that, like when the fish is coming from further away, I feel like I'm less likely almost to hook up with it.
I think when they start moving from far away too, the further they go, the more exposed they probably feel. And trout don't like that feeling.
Yeah. For sure.
Even the predator trout, I don't think like that feeling. Yep. And they're going, oh man, I'm moving. I got to get out of here. I'm turning around. You know, and he rejected it the last second.
Yeah.
The trout are pretty spooky that way.
Tactical Fly Fisher was started in 2015 by Fly Fishing Team USA angler Devin Olson, with a mission to bring American anglers the techniques and gear that dominate the international competitive fly fishing scene. While you may have no desire to compete, you can still benefit from the same strategies which competitive anglers use to make them more successful on the water. Whether you want to buy your nymphing rod, a stillwater fly line, or just some hooks and beads to fill your fly box, we've got you covered. And our teaching materials will help you learn how to use whatever products fill up your cart. Head on over to thetacticalflyfisher.com and use the code TFF10
to get 10% off flies, fly tying supplies, or terminal tackle.
Fly fishers are always looking for better wading traction. Whether hiking into your favorite pool or moving through a heavy run, you need traction that you can trust all day long. Grip Studs perform like no other screw-in cleat on the market. Grip Studs have a patented wide auger design that makes them easy to install without the need for pre-drilling, and that gives them unparalleled holding power in boot soles. Grip Studs' welded carbide tip not only provides intense traction on almost any surface, but it makes them one of the most durable wading boot studs available. I've had Grip Studs in my own boots for the last 3 years, and the single point carbide tips bite in like nothing else. Grip Studs gets you there. Visit gripstuds.com to learn more. Hey, before we move on to streamers, let me ask you this though. With dry flies, do you think you need to wait until the fish eats it and turns down? Do you always do that? Do you sometimes do that?
Was it God save the queen and then set?
Right, God save the queen and then set, right. Or Austin, what was your term? You said, didn't you?
I said I have to say that twice because I say it too fast.
Right.
God save the queen. God save the queen.
That's right. Doesn't help me. That's how it was. I thought you, that's right. That's right. Anyway, do you guys do that? Or do you just, boom, set as fast as you can?
I think it differs. I think like early season for me, those fish hit with reckless abandon. And I'm going to say rainbows, browns, they just eat, you know, for us, they just are hungry. They've been dormant all winter and they crush the fly to where I need to set the hook quick and my success rate is high. If I try to do that with a cutthroat dude, cutthroat trout eat painfully slow and I have to watch.
Like, really?
I have to, oh yeah, it's unlike anything I've ever seen. I mean, they hit. And then they go down, and then you have to set the hook. They're notorious to eat slow. And I don't why or what their deal is, but they're in no rush to eat a bug. And you have to set the hook differently than you would a brown trout.
I like
Man,
that.
Man, that's some serious decisions to make in a short window of time.
It is, yeah. For real. And day to day or moment to moment. Or
what's the species?
That's going to have to be. Yeah. For me, it's a water type thing. They're eating spinners too. It seems they're just so much more relaxed about the way they'll eat that spinner. They come up, sip it, and turn down. I got to give them a second, give them, boom, then I'll hit them. But yeah, in faster water, especially maybe with a caddis, like you were saying there, Matt, yeah, they're grabby. And if they're going to be grabby, then I'm going to be fast as I can.
Do you think it like the amount of bugs then, this all goes back to the amount of bugs on the water and how, like you just said, spinner fall. Well, if you look at the water at night right now in central Pennsylvania at dark, I mean, there's just a smorgasbord of bugs on the water so they can get lazy and eat to where the caddis midday, the opportunities to eat are different. So they're, you know, if you want to get really crazy, like Austin just said, I mean, you can start thinking about that and how you're going to hook set based on how many bugs are on the water. I mean, you guys agree with that mindset or not so much?
I do think so. I mean, I think to some extent, I don't know that it's worthwhile psyching yourself out, but I think kind of what you're saying matches in my mind to what Dom was saying about you're sort of, you have to learn the personality of the fish that are striking or what's the attitude of the fish they're striking and sort of match it to some extent.
Attitude.
Yeah. Like they're striking fast, you're striking fast. They're sipping, you're sipping. You know, it's like, you have to be synced up.
It's a good breakdown.
I don't think I guess to me, it doesn't matter the quantity of bugs. It matters the type of bugs and the type of feeding they're doing. So like you talked about a caddis. Caddis is going to skate across the water. And so
sometimes
it's going to eat it recklessly. And so, yes, you have to be on it quick versus like the mayflies and spinners. They're going to be mayflies, you know, they could be skating across or they could be just coming down. Floating like sailboats. And so to me, it depends on how they're eating it. It doesn't necessarily matter. Like if there were 1,000 caddis on the water versus 10 caddis in the water, they're going to eat caddis the same way.
Mm-hmm.
Either way.
And then you can get away with sloppier hook sets on a terrestrial because they just devour it.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. One thing about what Matt said, if there are thousands of bugs going past them every 2 minutes or something like that, they're seeing 1,000 bugs. then yeah, I think they're just going to kind of stay in their lanes. They're probably not, they're not going to be grabby. You know what I mean? The getting's good. It's easy. So they're probably not going to be real aggressive about those eats. And yeah, and then we're just naturally going to try to slow our hook set down. Now I will say, okay, so on dry flies, that's about the only time I ever try to go, okay, slow myself down. As we move into streamers, do you guys ever say, okay, I need a slower streamer hook set?
No.
I don't.
No.
At night.
Well, there you go.
There's the caveat.
That's a good one. That's very true. I hadn't thought about that, Josh. Okay, so we're saying generally no.
Yeah.
That we'd rather, okay, streamer, I'm fishing streamers. They eat, bam, I'm setting as fast as I can. But Josh, tell us the difference at night.
Yeah, at night, they just, they get a hold of it slower. And part of that is because it's night. They're going after a silhouette. They're looking up and then they're going after it.
Yeah.
And it is generally pretty aggressive. But they just don't always get a hold of it real well. Mm-hmm. You kind of got to give them a second. And we've seen a lot at night where that initial hit is not actually a take. Mm,
right.
And then you give them just a second, and then they're on it. And then as soon as you feel them, you kind of let them hook themselves. And as soon as you feel that second tug, then you lay into them hard.
Yeah, I'm so glad you brought that up. You and I have talked about this, and I know, Trevor, you and I have too. Mm-hmm. When I was a kid, my uncle taught me, we were fishing minnows, and my uncle said, oh, you need to let them take it. You're going to feel them. It's like tap, 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 tug, now set.
Yep, yeah.
You know?
Exactly. Like, that's the way it feels.
You have to let them eat it, right. And I never did that with a fly before. I mean, mm-hmm. I learned as soon as they eat the fly, they're trying to spit it out. Like, whoop, I made a mistake. That's a fake. I'm trying to get it out of my mouth now. But man, at night, you're so right. I mean, you need to let them. Boom, 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 boom. Oh, now I'll set.
Yeah.
And that took me seasons on the water to learn that at night.
Gosh, we lost so many fish like that.
Oh, me, right. All of us, right? It takes a long time to do something different.
No.
These losers that don't fish at night, right? They don't know.
We're good enough to catch them in the daylight. We don't need to do that.
Just picking on them in the dark.
Yeah.
Now, that's cool. But really, let's move back to the daylight where everybody else fishes, right? So we're trying to just set the hook as fast as we can. Is the same true on nymphs?
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, you're never saying, oh, let's let them eat it, you know, or let's let them turn back down, right?
If you don't want to catch a fish, yeah, you can do that.
Right.
For the same thing, you know, sometimes streamers are visual. Sometimes they're not.
Sure.
And oftentimes nymphs are not visual either. And the thing we have to think about is by the time that the fish does enough to our fly to travel through the line, to travel through our rod tip, to feel it in our hands, whatever it may be,
Or the
fish has already had to make a dramatic move for it to show up on our radar.
Yeah.
So the faster we can react to that, the more likely we are to hook it because, you know, we're already behind by the time we feel it.
That's nice. We're already behind. Yep. Yeah. That's the key.
And that's why we rely so much on visuals with sighters and stuff like that, is because if we're feeling it, if we're relying on feel, then we are much farther behind.
Sure.
Yeah.
And sight the same way. By the time we see it, we're still behind.
Would you'd say less behind, though, than we would be if we were relying on feeling it, right?
Right. Sure, that's why I build sighters even into my streamer rigs so I can see it better. If I'm not going visual streamer, which is more fun, Bill, you and I, we all talked about that.
Yeah,
we like to see our streamer, but sometimes you can't, and you don't want it that high in the column either. And yeah, I'll build a sighter into my rig just so I do have some of that visual.
Yep.
There's one application I used to do visually with a green weenie, and I used to sight fish it all the time, and I had to kind of teach myself to, instead of setting the hook quick, that was one of those things where I'd have to hesitate just a second when you would see that fish's mouth open up, and I would have to teach myself, okay, take, you know, half a second and then set the hook. And that always helped me with my catch ratio when I was sight fishing a green weenie.
The interesting thing there would be to know if, okay, you were watching the green weenie and you saw the fish actually eat it, but did your sighter move or did you ever feel it?
Right.
You know, right?
Yeah, right.
Yeah.
I was 12. I don't know what. I just was like, whoa.
I don't know, man.
This green weenie's great. It's like a neon green. It's the only thing I'd fish because I could see it.
No,
that was before 12. Bobbers. I didn't dry dropper. I was just like, I'm going to chuck this neon green thing in the water and watch these fish eat it.
So, hey, on these streamers, for me, I think I have the most misses on streamers. one of the most frequent questions I get about streamers is, hey, how do I stop missing all these fish? I'm getting a lot of hits, but not so many hookups. And your hookup ratio, I think, is lowest on streamers. Yes, no?
Yeah, definitely.
By far.
By a wide margin.
I think a good day of streamer fishing, you're hooking half of your fish.
I'm with that, yeah. About half. That's a pretty good day sometimes, yeah.
Yeah, it is. And then other days, I feel like it's 1 in 10 when they're... Mm. And then that's where it becomes like, is it me? Is it the fish? Yes. Like, I do think there are times that they are kind of just trying to get that fly out of their zone.
Just moving, yeah. They're not trying to eat it, you're saying.
Yeah, or they're just like kind of, yeah, they're not fully eating it. They're just kind of, you get that one thump and it's not like a good solid, like when they eat it and it's, if you've fished streamers long enough, you can tell the days that they are truly eating it because your catch rate goes way up versus the days that they're just trying to displace that or showing a little bit of interest.
Right. So if they're not trying to eat it, what are they trying to do to it, right? What are they trying to do?
Knock it out.
So, Dom, you said you miss more fish streamer fishing, but my question to you is, do you just miss more fish out of the 10 that you might move? Mm. Because when you're nymph fishing, you're gonna catch, I'm making this up, 40 and miss the 10% that Bill's saying, which you ended up missing... You know, four, whatever, 10 fish that day, right? But streamer fishing, are you saying you're going to catch 40 fish that way too, and you're missing more fish, or you're just missing more of the percentage of fish that you get action on, is what you're trying to say?
Yes, the second way. It always comes back to percentage. That's what I'm comparing. It's like,
gotcha.
Like Bill said, like that 50% is a pretty darn good day for hookups.
So I'm saying 50% on fish that physically hit the fly. I don't count, like if I displace a fish and he follows and then says, that sucks, and I leave, I'm not considering that a miss.
That's fair too. Yeah.
I don't experience that. Because I think
you fish out of sight a lot though, Austin.
That's exactly right. I fish smaller streamers and I also fish them pretty slow.
Yeah.
So again, it comes back to this thing where I talk about, I try to ask the least amount of the trout.
I like it.
And my hookup ratio is, I don't know, I feel like it's a lot higher than 50%.
That's neat.
Because of those things. If I was fishing big flies and fishing them fast, it would be different.
And higher in the water column.
Yep. Yeah.
Asking more of the trout, so they're going to commit less. This is cool.
That less confidence, right?
That's two very different ways of fishing. Bill, you said you like to keep yours in sight. I like to fish mine pretty fast. Yeah. I dead drift stuff all the time. When I move over to streamers, quite often I'm like, let me move this thing, you know? Not crazy move it, but yeah, I like to do something different.
I was going to bust the streamer guys and say, well, Austin, it's not hard to land three fish when you're throwing streamers.
Right. I moved seven of them, though.
You moved 20, but I caught three. It was amazing. Well, of course you didn't lose them.
But I've put up good days. Like, I've put up number days with streamers. Like, I've had days where I've caught over 30 fish on streamers.
Right. Mm-hmm. You find that bite. You need that bite, though. If you have a really good nymphing day and you're dialed in, I mean dialed in, and the fish are helping you out at least a little bit, you can catch 30 fish on nymphs and almost you're force feeding them, you know? But it is very difficult to force feed the 30 fish on streamers in a day.
Yeah,
even if you're working really hard. So I'd like to hear more about, though, let's talk more about why they'll move to a streamer but not eat it. Why they will even hit a streamer but not eat it. And both of those are kind of misses, but especially when they hit it, like you said, Bill, they actually touch the fly and you're considering that a miss. Again, I think on a streamer, probably more often than not, that's not our fault. I said this in the intro. I see that a lot. Fish coming, and they T-bone it even. They'll hit it hard, but they're not even trying to eat it.
That can be on us a lot too, though, because on that impact, we're going to react as if we might have a fish on. And if we react as if we might have a fish on, then we're going to pull that fly entirely out of that fish's feeding area.
Well, that's why people say to strip set, right? If you strip set, then you're going to move it to 1 foot, 2 foot, three feet away. I don't always strip set. We can talk about
either.
That some other time, whatever. But when I set, I'm only going to move the fly 1-2 feet maybe, even on a streamer. Boom, set, whatever.
Yeah.
And so that fish can get a second shot. Mm-hmm. I feel like they don't take a second shot because they go, whatever I just hit, that wasn't real. What the heck was I doing? I'm going back down out of sight, you know, below my log. I think they feel a little silly and they get out of there. But anyway.
I'm embarrassed.
And they're embarrassed. They're going to hit it to stun it. We've talked about that. Like they want to eat it head first. A lot of times, you know, a bigger food form, they want to eat it head first. Sometimes they have to eat it head first. I think that's true.
I feel like we also see a lot, like, let's say we miss one and then we throw right back in and the same thing happens again. And we miss it, we throw back in and then we hook up. I don't know. There's certain days when they're just in the mood that they'd eat anything if they got thrown in front of their face.
Mm-hmm. Now, this past week I experienced where nymphing was not on and nymphing was not good, but the streamer bite was better than what nymphing was. It's rare, but I don't know. I have experienced that. And so sitting there working a run and switching nymphs, couldn't get it. And then I put a streamer on and I throw it out. I strip it once and the fish comes up and eats it. And
I had that. Yeah.
And it's an odd thing. You know, you're going to get one in, let's say, six fish that are truly going to eat that. Mm. But nymphing just seems like it's dead sometimes. I don't know if you guys experienced that.
Yeah, sure.
I think you guys may have touched on this a little bit with the T-boning action, but as a species, trout, and especially it seems like the larger they get, they do employ a predatory tactic that's used by other fish of sort of stunning or kind of immobilizing prey. And I think that's what we sometimes see at night, Josh and Dom, is that sort of predatory instinct to come up and hit. And you sort of, I think, they learn something about what they're hitting, but they also, they're trying to stun it and kind of disable it. And I know there have been specific nights, Josh, where you've had fish and I've had fish hit our fly and then track it downstream.
Yes.
And then hit, and then really we hook up
like 10 feet, maybe plus,
10 feet, right? Mm-hmm. Which, and the only reason they were able to do that is because we're not manipulating the fly after they hit it that first time. Mm-hmm. You're sort of letting it dead drift after that, and they expect that prey to get stunned and sort of drift then with the current. Mm-hmm. And so, I think, and those, I wouldn't consider that in the daytime your fault for not hooking up with that fish necessarily the first few times. But if you notice, and I do think that's a behavior that you see among larger trout.
And I think the larger the food form, the more often they're going to stun it. Yep. Like that, or just whack it, you know, to maybe good even call. Just see what it is for that sure.
Makes sense.
Bill, I've back to your original question. I've only had like better luck on streamers over nymphs when nymphs go completely dead on mostly predominantly brown trout places. Like if there's places out here that have a lot of rainbows, I don't know why. I just feel like the browns are just much more like they want to eat streamers and aggressive way more so than rainbow trout.
Nice.
And that's a small sample size, but that's what I feel like happens.
I agree with that. I feel like I've floated a couple rivers that have good populations of both, and you may catch, you know, let's say in a 6 mile float, you might catch a half dozen browns, but you never even move or have a rainbow even look at your streamer. I think it's just, I feel like a true wild rainbow, they're not built or they're not a streamer eater.
Their genetics aren't wired like the browns are.
So the other thing with streamers is I do think when I first started, you know, everything you read is like, you know, throw out, strip, strip, strip. And so I'm basically using the rod tip to manipulate the streamer for the most part. In a slower retrieve, like while I may fish it higher in the column, I'm still fishing a slower retrieve and giving the fish more time to eat it. I feel like I do get a lot. Like when you're stripping fast and everything is fast, the fish is faster. The fish misses it more often. When the fish does eat it, if you're stripping in line more often, there's more times when you're not in contact with the line because you're stripping.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so you're just going to have to accept if you're using those faster retrieves and those more erratic retrieves, you're gonna have to accept that the trout are not gonna hook up as much. Your hookup ratio is gonna go down. You might actually find more trout that'll, I don't know, on a good day you might find trout chasing it down and being more interested, perhaps. That's what we're talking about, is missing fish, losing fish. Well, then you're gonna have to accept that, right? If you want to take it to the fish more, like Austin's saying, his hookup ratio is better than ours. you know, Bill, what we're...
That's what he claims.
That's what he claims. We have no proof of this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, think about a moving target, right? A faster moving target is harder to hit than a slower one.
There you go. Especially curveballs, Trevor.
Curveballs, yeah, that's right. I also think that, as you guys know, the larger trout have kind of big, cartilaginous, tougher mouths.
Whoa, and I think that plays...
Hey now.
You can't just drop that in.
That's not a word.
What? That's like it's a 101 term.
He's been waiting to use that word.
That's a 101 term.
What just happened? What is that?
What just...
Listen.
Break that down for the dummies.
Large cartilaginous mouths full of cartilage. Cartilage, hard stuff rather than soft stuff.
Oh, that's what you mean. Okay.
Like my nose.
Oh.
Yes, right. Like push on the tip of your nose. That's cartilage.
My ear has cartilage, right?
Yes, ears, et cetera.
My doll hook didn't penetrate the cartilage, the whatever you just said.
Cartilogical.
Cartilaginous. Anyway, big, big trout. I think if there's a lot less for that hook to find purchase on. And I also think just having looked at some of these large trout mouths, particularly at night with our big streamers, I've sort of, like Josh and I have talked about this, but I think they could definitely get that streamer in their mouth sideways and kind of pin it with the hook kind of flat and sideways. And you have that fish, because we've often wondered, like, how do you have a fish on the line for like 10 or 15 seconds with this huge hook
and then lose it.
Articulated streamer, and then lose it clean, right?
Yeah.
And these are sharp hooks, et cetera. But I think they do. They'll sometimes pin it sideways like that with these larger hooks, never really get the tip into that tougher material.
Sure.
And then they open their mouth and it just flies out, you know?
Just get the tip in and you're good.
Get out of here.
Get out of here. Get out of here.
You get out of here.
Nah, I'm sure that happens during the daylight, you know?
For sure.
That's true. That's a good reason for why they, you know, why we lose them. Yeah. 30 seconds into the fight, well, they finally just let go.
They just open their mouth. I think sometimes
especially
they just
with a streamer.
In their mouth. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Point. Especially with a streamer. That big food form, they're just clenched down on it, but you still haven't actually hooked them yet. And they go, all right, I'll give up. I'll let this thing go. Well, right. There it goes.
It's fighting like hell.
That's neat. Mm-hmm. One thing for me on streamers, my hookup ratio is best when the head position is faced down and across, some angle. Let's say 45 degrees down and across would be my very favorite angle. When it's the other way, when it's 45 degrees up and across, or even straight upstream, when that head angle is straight upstream, I might get a lot of looks and drive-bys and flashes and very few hookups. And years ago, I used to ask myself, man, why do I get so many looks and I'm getting like 10%, 20, 30% at the most hookups? But once I started, you know, changing, flipping that angle to, again, head downstream and across, that's my best angle for actually getting trout to eat the fly and not just look at it or flash at it. You guys?
No, I agree. In the daylight, I like the head to be faced downstream.
In the daylight again, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It matters too.
Yeah, I think so. I guess when you're talking about T-bone, so like if I'm fishing the current, I want the fly to almost be parallel to the bank. And so when it's parallel to the bank, it's giving that fish a bigger profile. And so it looks like a dying fish that's kicking up in the current. And so I feel like that's my best.
Perpendicular with the bank, then. If you're going broadside, you mean perpendicular with the bank.
I mean parallel with the bank. So.
But they can't see a broadside then.
Yeah.
But
parallel would be facing directly downstream or directly
like
upstream.
While it passes by, Bill?
What I'm saying is the fish comes off the bank. The fish is on that fly. And so when the fly goes parallel to the bank, it's going to, you know, musky term, it's going to T-bone the fly and it's going to go broadside to that fish.
So you're saying that the fish sees it across stream, not necessarily looking upstream at it, but the fish sees it across stream and then he goes and gets it. So it's across stream, like broadside in that way.
Yeah.
That's cool. I never thought about that.
So then does he chase it downstream at that point?
Probably, yeah. A little bit.
Depending on how far away and stuff like that, yeah.
Yeah. If he did it right, he ate it. Like as soon as it went parallel or broadside.
That's neat.
Like honestly, the majority of the strikes are when that fly changes orientation. Like
Head flip.
Like whether it's, you know, whatever you're doing, whatever, you know, whether you're turning it up or turning it down,
Yeah.
I would say 80% of my strikes come when that, when the fly changes orientation, it looks like the fly's fluttering and dying.
Yeah. Yeah. It gives them, gives the trout a chance to eat it. It gives them an opportunity, right? Like you said, maybe it looks like it's dying. That's neat. I think there's more variation for what works with streamers than any other fly. You know, I never thought about that looking across to see a broadside idea, but that's cool. And I know it works for you. I'm going to try that more.
All right, guys, that's enough about streamers. I'd like to
Thank God.
Move us on to nymphs here. Our favorite of all.
That's a great segue.
Of all. Our favorite of all life forms, our favorite ways of fishing. Let's talk about nymph fishing, probably the most mistakes on nymphs. What do you guys think about that?
I think I get more mistakes on streamers.
Interesting.
I lose more fish on nymphs.
Again, we're talking percentages, right?
Right.
Percentage, yeah, right. We're not talking numbers.
Right. Yeah.
Okay, yeah.
We all lose more fish on nymphs.
Yeah.
Because we fish nymphs more.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, I think they get
off. Talk about quantity. I mean,
exactly. Yeah, again,
LDR, we just said percentages, long distance right. release.
There you go.
Mm-hmm.
Let's count on a clicker, right? LDR.
I mean, it depends. That's how big they are. Yeah. Yesterday they might have counted when I saw, when you can identify the species, it's an LDR. It's a click.
Well, that's oh, every that's time here.
Click numbers. Come on, numbers.
No. No, I mean, it, as long no, as man, it falls really with it, as long as it falls within Bill Dell's percentages of 10%, they get added to the click. If you start really, if you sloop them, which is what I call them, if you're
poor guy,
if you're slooping fish, then you know of 20%, they don't get clicked. So sloop's a good one. He coined it himself. He sloops them so that he and that's it? When you fight them for a little bit and they get off and he loses there. The fish. And so he's like he should be a case study on
on losing fish.
What's happening with the nymph game? And I think a lot of the times,
go ahead,
for him and us and all of us, it's you know, you're when you set. How many times is were the nymphs downstream of your sighter because you weren't tracking fast enough? And,
oh, sure.
And for me, that's the number one why I feel like I lose more again. Fish. It's the slack underneath the surface that you can't see. And a good way to figure out if you're not tracking, and we've talked, you guys have, you know, we've all talked about it. Dom, you write about it. You pull up at the end of your drift or whatnot, and those nymphs aren't where they should be and they're downstream of your sighter. Well, you're right. There's your signal that you're, you know, even if you do get hooked up, it's probably not going to be a good hook set. Right.
Yeah.
And you're going to lose that fish after four or five head shakes.
Hey, so slooping fish, you're just saying is losing a fish, having them on for a while and then losing them.
Slooping it.
And he coined the phrase himself.
Yeah, I mean, through text messages or yesterday, I mean, I was fishing with him. Oh, you hear, you know, I'll hear bison, and then I'll
bison.
Hear. Yesterday, we were in the park fishing, and you heard all these bison. They were getting close, and they were moaning. And then every in between the moans, I slooped one. That was how my day went yesterday. So yeah, if you lose a fish, you slooped it.
I like it.
I've been fishing these last 4 or 5 days in a row here, and things have been really good.
Hey, now.
And I've been missing a lot of fish, though, actually. This is good timing to talk about it. And I think it somewhat has to do with water type. So all the fish around me right now that I'm fishing for are in hard, fast, shallower runs. And when I hook them, I don't know if it's been the high water season we've had, but they're full of energy. And I hook them, and they immediately want to run downstream on me. And their head facing up in the current, too, they get these crazy head shakes right off the bat. And my rod tip basically starts following suit. And my rod tip sometimes struggles to settle down to control the fish's head to where I can't stop it in that heavy, hard water and get it out fast enough. That it just runs to the surface, runs downstream, puts a really funny angle on me, and it's gone. And it's hard to control.
Did you listen to the Fighting Big Fish episode?
It sounds like you need to go back and do that.
We have some tips for you.
Oh, shut up. You know you experienced the same thing.
Never happened to me.
Yeah.
Well, you're saying, I'm confused here. Like,
go ahead.
So
let's make it the outro.
I'm confused too.
I think he's saying that because they're already so close to the surface of the water, he's basically, they're surfacing right away as he hooks them. And then they have a lot of, I mean, you guys all know, like, but easy way to lose a fish is put it on the surface.
Rod tip's upstream. Yeah. Rod tip's right where it should be. But what I'm saying is,
do you feel like it's because you're not getting a good hook set off the get-go because you're fishing shallow water and your tippet might be too long and you might have too much slack in the system or no?
Maybe, but it's a fast hook set.
So which angle are you setting the hook? Are you setting the hook up?
No, down into the side, downstream in the fish's jaw.
Yeah, toward the back cast.
Okay. So
are you compensating the sighter for the shallow water as well? Like, are you much higher on the sighter in that shallow water?
Sometimes. It depends.
I'd be more horizontal on the sighter.
Well, it depends. Because you can go more horizontal and higher off the water. Right. You can go more vertical and, right. and higher off the water. Sure. You know?
But you're thinking about that, though, when you're in that shallow stuff?
Sure. And that's a good point, too, because I think in the harder, faster water, I'm a little more apt to be more in contact with the fly because it's so fast.
When they hit it,
you know, I'm right on it right away. And sometimes, I don't know what it is, but it feels like I almost bounce off the fish's mouth.
Mm-hmm.
It's weird. I haven't really experienced it as much as I did this weekend, and I've had a hard time fixing it.
I noticed what you were saying when you and I were fishing together, though. They are reacting with a little bit more spunk than normal.
Oh, they're going nuts. Nice. They're just ripping.
Yeah.
They're eating hard over there right now. I was there
sometime Sunday. The fish win, guys. Sometimes the fish just win.
There you go. That's a great point. No matter what style of fly we're fishing. Yeah. Sometimes that's what I'm saying. It's inevitable. It's going to happen. And yeah, we'd like to limit it. And yes, a lot of times it's our fault. We're talking about ways to possibly correct it, but you can't, you're not going to get to 100% hookup ratio.
Yeah. What?
Yeah. I just felt like the hard, fast water was harder to solve the problem than like medium paced, good depth water where it's pretty relaxed off the get go.
Was it with misses or losses, Austin?
Losses.
Right. So you're saying, though, basically, it was in the fish fight that you were losing them. Like, they were getting downstream of you accidentally.
Not even. Like, they'd just be upstream of me. I'd have a good angle on them, and they just come off.
Any aerials?
Yeah, they're doing that quite a bit. Because they're running straight to the surface and flying. Yeah. It was kind of a mixture of, you know, maybe being higher in the faster speed of the column. I'm not sure what's going on.
Matt, talk about that.
I think back to yesterday, and every time a fish went airborne, all of a sudden I was losing a higher percentage of those fish than if I could keep them in the water with, even if they would get downstream of me or upstream of me, I feel like my percentage of landing those fish is better than the aerial acrobats. Somehow they create, because how do you compensate for slack in an aerial fish? It's almost impossible.
Yeah, it's tough.
Well, I yank, like, when that fish jumps, I'm yanking that fish
out.
Knock
him back in the water, right? Bill, you and me, bud.
Yeah.
Yep. People say bow to the fish, right? Nah. You've heard that term. Bow to the fish. That's a saltwater thing. Bow to the fish so that the fish doesn't land on your line. Or if he lands on your line, there's some slack there. Well, that's if you have a barb in there and that fish is really solidly hooked with a barb. I'm like you, Bill. If he jumps, I'm knocking him back in the water. I want to keep that tension. So I'll lean back. I'm not saying I jerk him back.
Oh, I pull him. Like, I mean, fish is in the water. He's coming 2 feet at me if he's big enough.
Yeah, but I kind of lean back and I try to get him back in the water under tension real quick. I think what you brought up there, Matt, is a real key. And maybe, who knows, Austin, we're trying to dissect it, right? It's kind of fun.
Come on, somebody help me.
But really, well, the guy, Matt said it was for him yesterday. For me, the guy today lost 3 fish. You know, it was disappointing for him because he was doing things right. I was like, oh, nice drift. And then the fish would eat. He's like, say that again. Yeah. I said, you got to get a nice drift again. But he would. But he lost, I'm serious, like 3 out of the first 5. And he disappointed. I was like, well, you're losing them because you're bringing them to the surface. And everybody says, oh, he's jumping on me. Well, no, you're accidentally bringing these fish to the surface. They kind of have nowhere to go and they're trying to get away and they end up jumping in the air. And that's when he was losing them. And I'd say 2 of them he lost actually in the air. The fly popped out. And then another one went back down under and it was under for another 2 seconds or 3 seconds. And then the hook popped out. That's the way it goes. You aerialize them and you're going to lose them a lot more. What else on nymphs?
When I miss fish and I lose fish, a lot of times I'm late. Maybe I'm stripping line and I'm not keeping up enough. Anything that's causing me not to be 100% in contact, or they're just, they are eating it like on entry. where
that'll get you.
If they're eating it on entry and you're not 100% in contact, you may detect a strike and you may hit the fish a little bit and you may lose the fish because the fish half spit the hook out at that point.
Yeah, right.
It kind of keeps coming back to slack, right? No matter what style of fly we're fishing, it does. It kind of comes back to slack being the real enemy. We need it with the dries. Sometimes we're building it into streamer presentations. But with nymphs, what we're trying to do, especially with a tight line nymph presentation, is to let it drift drag free, but also be in touch kind of at the same time. We've talked about slip and contact, in and out of contact on a really great tight line presentation. It's imprecise. It's an imperfect system, right? And then especially if you add an indie in there, now there's a little bit more. There's maybe slack between you and the indie, and now there might be slack between you and the nymph. And so it's imprecise. And so sure, we're going to lose fish, but we're especially going to miss fish underneath on the nymphs and underneath on the streamers. But yeah, it's imprecise. Like Matt said, sometimes the fish wins. I do think by just fishing more and caring about what you're doing, it's all going to work out. Are any of us really concerned about our fish, our hookup ratio right now?
Maybe Austin.
Yeah, maybe.
Yeah.
But no, like Austin's giving us
concerned.
Really. Austin's giving us a story about an unusual day for him.
Yeah.
Right? We could all share stories about an unusual day. But for us normally, we don't feel like we have a problem with it. And I think it's experience. What we're saying is experience is going to not solve it, but clean it up quite a bit. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, you're going to be presented with a day, you're going, man, I'm losing too many fish. Bill, you said it in the last podcast. If you're missing fish, you're doing something wrong. And I believe that. And I think we all believe that. So then we try to correct it. That's what we're trying to talk through here is how can we correct it? What is the problem? How do we correct it, right?
Yeah, it's just part of the game. You have to accept you're going to lose good fish. You're going to lose and miss good fish. And it's just, you know, that's what keeps you coming back, though, and keeps you motivated to come back.
Yeah, right on.
And do better.
And a lot of those losses can be cleaned up with better fish fighting principles. I think what we were mostly talking about here in this podcast is that the losses, they're kind of a result of, you almost missed them, but you did hook them, but you just slightly hooked them. Then he popped off a few seconds later. But lots of times we know, oh, that was a fish fighting mistake, you know?
I tried to let Bill net my good fish this weekend. I knew that was a fish fighting mistake.
Don't let your friends net your
fish. That fish was 20 yards below you. You didn't have a chance.
He ran.
Bill, I ghost netted one. Bill has a story about one time we were guiding together and he was going to net a guy's fish and it slipped off the hook and it was on. It was like no hook in the water for like 2 or 3 feet and Bill still netted it. Right?
Yeah.
I did that.
Awesome.
Nice. I tried to do that with Trevor's, but
he was too big for your
no
net.
Love. He was too big for my net. We'll say that.
He was pretty big, wasn't he?
Nice.
Yeah, he was a good fish.
At least 27 inches.
It was in that slot, 18 to 27.
In that slot.
That classic 9-inch slot.
Anything else, guys?
Yeah. So there's one thing we didn't go over tonight, and that's the phantom miss. And I want to bring the phantom miss to everybody's attention. And
it's
so
a new term.
Yeah, so follow me here. So we're on the, you're fishing with your good buddy, and he keeps oohing and aahing about all the fish he's missing.
Nice.
And you walk,
that's a fit.
You walk upstream, yeah. So you walk upstream, you get on the bank to enjoy a nice cigar, and you're watching your buddy cast, and he's setting the hook on all the naturals, and not one fish is eating his dry fly. And you're like, okay, so he we know that guy, right? Ooh, ah.
Yeah.
And it's like, man, wasn't your fly. He's not eating your fly. We can't help you. We have no tactics. And if we can help you, my recommendation is to tie some pink widow's web into your dry fly pattern so then you can visually see that these fish aren't eating your fly.
So when you were talking phantom, I was thinking about the blind strike. Like, do you guys when you make some casts, do you occasionally, like, when it comes through a good spot the first time, like if I'm convinced there's a fish there, there's a lot of times where I'm setting and there's a lot of times where that ends up being a fish. Yeah. And
I do that especially where I can't necessarily keep my sighter in a place where I could see the strike. So like, say I'm drifting along the bank and there's an overhanging branch and I have to drop my line underneath that branch.
Yeah, good point.
I'll strike maybe a second or two into that because I think, all right, my flies are right where I think that fish might be holding. They're probably not affected by the drag yet. And it, yeah, sometimes it works. Sometimes it doesn't.
I have a video of Bill doing that. I mean, maybe he felt it, but in the video, you can't see the rod reacting to anything. And he's looking downstream. He's like not paying attention to his drift. And he sets into a fish. And then he looks at his rod and he's like, oh, there's a fish on there.
I could feel it.
I think he was starting to catch.
It was that sixth sense, you know.
So I guess I blind strike a lot because I hook set at the end of every drift. Mm-hmm. If I get clear to the back end of my drift, and I'm talking about nymphing, and if I didn't have a chance to set, you didn't give me a chance, you didn't give me a reason to set, I hook set at the end anyway. And so I guess that's blind striking. And yeah, by the end of the day, two or three, four, five fish sometimes. I didn't know he was on there, but I hook set, so I got him. Crisp. Set crisp.
Don't set like a
All right. Nice. All right, there it is. Why we miss fish and why we lose fish on a fly. Slack. That's the big reason, right? It's our inability to set the hook effectively because we have too much slack. And it's also the way that unmanaged slack can hurt our presentations. When a trout takes a fly that's going just a little off course, it probably doesn't get a real clean take. Some of those drifts result in flies hooked just on the edge of the jaw, and the hook pops out quickly. We miss the fish before we ever had it. Other times, the hook seems to set firmly, and we fight the fish for some time before we lose it. This, too, is often the result of unmanaged slack, either in the presentation or on the hook set. There are surely other reasons for missing and losing fish, as we talked about, and there are ways to fix it. You can blame the trout, too, if that makes you feel better. Tell yourself they were hitting short today. Or you can try to find your faults and correct them. Fish on, fish fought, fish landed, fish released, all better. But that said, I'll reiterate two final points here. Like Matt said, sometimes the fish wins, and no one has anything close to a perfect hookup ratio. And as I mentioned in the intro, if you're to the point where you're worrying about all the trout you're missing, then relax a bit and enjoy the fact that you're fooling fish. The next steps are much easier. Hey, thanks again to my trout bitten friends for being here and to all of our trout bitten friends out there who are listening. Please support the companies who support this episode. Austin, will you read us out?
Remember, the Trout Bitten Project is a free resource for all anglers. The Trout Bitten website hosts over 800 articles with endless stories, commentaries, tactics, tips, and more. Find what you like through the top menu and through the search page. Navigate by way of the categories and the tags, too. Also, be sure to find the Trout Bitten YouTube channel, currently featuring the Trout Bitten Tip Series in collaboration with Wilds Media. These are short, useful, and unique tips for your fly fishing life. Thank you for listening to the Trout Bitten Podcast. Please give the show a 5-star rating on Apple Podcasts and leave us a comment, because it really helps. Until next time, friends, fish hard, enjoy the day, and find your life on the water.
Get out of here.
I'm not going to pick sides.
And I
choose your fighter.
I like different.
I think we are very interesting people.
Collectively.
We don't practice this.
You're throwing curveballs.
I did it this weekend.
And I just was building up too many bellies.
And there's nothing wrong with that.
Yeah. I mean, they were just, look at the Pac-Man, you know, just boom, boom.
And I.
Cartilaginous.
I'm confused here.
Cartilaginous.
He's been waiting to use that word.
Cartilaginous.
Ah.